as, you know, as a direction for us to study this issue. And I view the global warming question as broad, and our task force does. Certainly fossil fuels are a major player, but they may not be the only player and are, or the only principal player, and our knowledge of this is still pretty small. And by that I mean not just the state, but nationwide and internationally. The 20% target, for example, that's in subsection E is one that I think it was the Montreal conference suggested a couple of years ago as a target, and is a number that's being used in Congress for some bills on national legislation that's being considered. But we may find in two or three years that that's an inappropriate target or unrealistic, and I would view our obligation to be ongoing to report back to you if the target needs to be changed, if there are specific strategies that would help reduce emissions that require legislative action, or are things that could be done administratively, or things that would require congressional action. So I would view this as a very broad but important mandate.
I
was out of the room for a moment. I don't know whether you discussed the relationship to nuclear energy here.
Mm-hmm. No.
There is obviously one in the reduction of the greenhouse gases, or whatever you called them, which would be virtually non-existent, I think, from a nuclear energy source. Are you suggesting that nuclear energy is more desirable than the burning of fossil fuels?
I don't think they were suggesting that. Really, in fact, I don't know that we got into the topic.
Yes, I had a question along the same lines.
I asked, you know, you fellows obviously have discussed this. I wish, you know, they just share their knowledge with me.
Well, I'm wondering, let me get to them in a minute. Representative Ostiker raised an issue a little while ago. That's fine, Representative Agnew. Let's come back to that. I think if we look at page 2, line 4, item E, I'm wondering if we wouldn't get at this issue and avoid some of the questions you were raising, Representative Ostiker, by simply putting a period at the end of global warning.
Mr. Chairman, that would meet my concern. I don't know if the Department of Energy feels that they want to take on that kind of task in relationship to the plan that they're involved in energy planning. So it may be that if this particular thing is associated with energy planning, that it would leave up the Department or the proponents of the bill to decide whether they wanted to incorporate that into this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I would have no objection to that, because I think that is consistent with
your major source, your major concern anyway, isn't it?
Right.
Okay, and then the language issue about the strategy, I think you're correct, that isn't good language, but you got any suggestions for changing it?
The
intent of the strategy is to reduce.
Shall be designed for the implementation of the strategy.
Mm-hmm. Purpose of
the implementation of the strategy is to reduce these emissions?
Purpose. I think it's the purpose or the intent or
the purpose of the strategy
is to
reduce.
That's what it is.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Weehage.
Further question. In line 6 and 7, and this is a follow-on question to Representative Agron's questioning, the strategy shall reduce these emissions by use of conservation and renewable resources. I heard on the radio this morning that the Northwest Power Planning Council is now predicting electric energy production shortfalls in the late 90s based on current projections, which would suggest we're going to have to redouble our efforts in the area of conservation or start building new sources of power production. And I'm just wondering whether we're being short-sighted in limiting this study to just conservation and renewable resources. I realize that you know, this is being brought to us by the Solar Energy Association, and you have a certain philosophical bent towards renewable resources. But is it appropriate to mandate that this study be limited just to that? Wouldn't it be appropriate for those sources rather to be given priority, but that the study not be limited to just those?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wehage, those sources already are given priority under the state's energy policy. The Department of Energy has always operated under the assumption that it developed conservation first, renewables as their second priority, and high efficiency resources such as cogeneration as their third priority, and conventional thermal resources such as coal and nuclear as only their fourth priority. The reality is that we do have many affordable alternatives to conventional thermal generation. The conservation resource in the Pacific Northwest is estimated at about 4,000 megawatts, and we suspect that is potentially as much as 2,000 megawatts understated because of the advances that we've made in commercial building energy efficiency since the last Northwest Power Plan was adopted. In addition, there are several thousand, that probably 4,000 megawatts of geothermal that look like they're probably cost-effective in the region. There are wind resources that are now cost-effective. Solar hot water heating is marginally cost-effective right now. Basically, we've got affordable alternatives to coal-fired generation that will last us for 10, 15 years at least. I don't think that it's potentially an issue for many years that we will necessarily have to face.
Then you should have no problem about saying that those are the priority. We're using the same priority system that's already set up by saying that conservation and renewable resources are considered first, and then other sources would be considered as secondary sources.
No, I don't have any
less
problem.
Preferable sources. It would appear to me to be more appropriate if we're going to develop a study. I took lab in college, and I knew how to get the right answers.
You could share that with us at some point.
I'm just suggesting that we don't want to put this study in a, you know, we don't want to put bounds on this study. We want it to be a genuine study that can be actually used later on, and I don't want it to be questioned later on. I think they should be given a free hand in terms of coming up with a strategy that considers all possibilities.
Mr. Chairman, I have no objection to that.
Okay. We've got two more witnesses, so why don't you, if you're going to be here available, we come back to this minute. Yes, Representative Dick. Representative Jones.
I have a question in relationship to sub 2 of section 1 on the first page. You indicate that you want the research to be submitted back to the legislative body and the governor, but I found it interesting that you didn't want the strategy to come back to this body before it was determined to be acceptable. Is there a reason why you would have the research come back but not the strategy that you developed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, I think that's just a reflection of how this thing was, current law is codified. The energy plan, this would be part of our energy plan and the whole energy
plan. That's existing language, I realize.
Right, and we would, as the way at least I read this, is the conclusions on global warming would be included in our energy plan, and that entire plan would be made available to the legislature just like we do currently, so including our global warming work.
So the strategy that you're putting together as a result of this bill would in fact be your intent to review that with the next legislative session?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, that's
there
correct.
Isn't a time frame on this, I notice, in terms of your department's responsibility. Do you have a specific time in which you expect that to be done?
Well, our energy plan is required to be ready the first of every odd-numbered year, and so our global warming work would be part of that.
And this would be complete by that time? The strategy, because this is a specific strategy that you're putting together.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, I guess it would be complete insofar as we could make conclusions at that point. We really are beginning a very new and complicated subject, and I think that strategy would change every 2 years for a while, realistically.
Go ahead.
Well, and this gives me a little concern, and right now the testimony before Congress and evidently the interest is that we reduce. I think I noticed in the testimony that I have in front of me that we were looking at reducing it to by 20% by the year 2000 in the national focus, But I don't know that we know in Oregon enough to know that 20% by the year 2005 is a realistic goal, because we have new information almost every day on this subject, and it's still very new. Is there a reason why you felt this is realistic and sufficiently realistic to put it in this bill this way?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jones, when we constructed the bill, we took the most conservative estimate that was out. There were
at this time.
Right. And if anything, any estimates that have come out since then have all been higher. I've seen very few. I've seen none that have been lower, in fact.
You've said here at least 20%, so it could very well be higher than that. Okay.
I guess my concern is that it be quite clear that this is something that we would want to specifically look at in the next session, because I think we'd like to know the progress in this specific piece next session.
Why don't I have you do this? I want to close the hearing. We've got two more witnesses, but close the hearing for a few minutes to give Representative Dwyer, who has to chair a committee, a chance to give testimony on another bill. Why don't you look at that and see if we can change the language that would accommodate what Representative Jones has suggested. He says, I think it makes sense to just get the appropriate language. And then in about 10 minutes, we'll be coming back to this and finishing it.
Thank you.
At this point, I will close the hearing on Senate Bill 576 and open the hearing on House Bill 3493 and call Representative Dwyer up to the table.
93.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Dwyer. I'm the state representative for District 42, Springfield. 3493 as a result of what happened there up in Prince William Sound there with the oil spill. You recall Representative Hanneman had a fund in that dealt with that for years and decided to do away with it. And it was ironic that should a spill happen like that here in Oregon, we have no penalties. There would have been no penalty, or they would have been so small. The ORS 468785, that sub one, that's spillage from a ship and whatnot, so it would result in that. I don't think it's strong enough, because we really don't have any civil penalties that I'm aware of for those people that are responsible for the cleanup and whatnot, and conceivably this would punish the drunken captain of that ship should it happen off Oregon, but I think it needs some work. I think we ought to address those kinds of problems happening here, especially since we're dealing with offshore exploration and stationary platforms and conceivably endangering our ocean resources and our ocean beaches. And it'd probably be a pretty opportune time for the committee to deal with that, and I would hope that you would use this bill as a vehicle to do such.
Who drafted the bill, Bill?
Legislative Council.
But I mean, you know who was in Legislative Council?
I think it was,
I guess it does make a difference, but you're suggesting that we need to look at it clean and spend a little time on the language here.
That's right, and we may want to look at the fund that they disestablished, that was established for oil spills, a cleanup fund that Hanneman, that was his bill at one time, and we may want to also require civil penalties for damages against those people that are responsible. This came in quickly because there was no vehicle, and I think it would be an ideal thing for the committee to deal with.
We might also want to check the judiciary on it. Representative Dix.
Well, I just wanted to add to Representative Dwyer's comments that it is ironic that, as I understand the story goes, Representative Hanneman risked brutality within his own caucus in the early 70s by getting that bill passed, and only to have Representative Gustafson turn around and gut the bill in the late 70s. And in fact, had we had the bill in place, the trust fund would be substantial today. And I really think we ought to take a look at putting that back into law in case there ever is an accident in this state, because there's no fund available and we were fighting right now over whether we have rights to 3 miles or 12 miles. Whatever the case is, it seems that the federal government's interested in drilling off our coast. And if that ever happens, there is a possibility, and I think the oil companies will acknowledge this, that there could be an accident and there's no way to clean it up. So I would...
Well, there could be an accident on a tanker just going up and down the coast.
Well, yeah, and I think there's merit to imposing penalties. I don't think these are even close to substantial enough. This is about 10 minutes or 5 minutes of work day for Exxon.
Well, that's right.
They just, in fact, I would suggest they'd probably write you the check before the boat came up the Columbia, is how they'd probably proceed.
Class B felony is a pretty serious offense in jail, isn't it?
It's a serious offense for the skipper. You know, that's the poor guy that took the heat.
Yeah, well, that's who gets nailed.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, I put it in to give us a vehicle with the relating clause because there were no penalties on board for, there's no law against drunk skippering.
Mr. Chairman, is there a subsequent referral to the judiciary on this? I feel somewhat ill-qualified to talk about
negligence. Well, our rules do not require in the House that you can send a bill to a second substantive committee. It would have to either go to Revenue or Ways and Means. I don't think there's any reason for that, but we could ask judiciary to look at it. We could lend it to them, or we could ask them to give us their views.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
I did spend a term up there, and I can tell you they know no more than most of us.
And I would agree with Representative Dix. Now you really have me worried, Representative Dix.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know who's going to be working on this bill, but when they do their work on it, there should be a minimum spillage in there, too.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, somebody's negligently spilled a gallon of oil, you wouldn't want it to be a Class B felony.
That's heavy. That's heavy.
But that deals with ships. It doesn't deal with motorboats and whatnot. Well, that statute specifically, the reference sub one is ships and oil barges and whatnot. So,
we'll work on it.
But would you please?
There's an interest in it.
I know you'll do a good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing it. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on House Bill 3493? Now we will close the hearing on House Bill 3493 and reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 576. And at this point, I will call on Dale Isham and I think Kelly Redman. So we'll ask to check with Blair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Dale Isham, representing the Northwest Propane Gas Association. The Northwest Propane Gas Association hasn't been very involved in these kinds of issues in the past, and I think we're beginning to recognize that we should, and do have something of benefit to contribute to these kinds of issues and something of benefit to the environment. I don't have any written testimony today, and I apologize for that, and I would just like to offer one minor amendment to the bill. This bill, of course, addresses a very important issue, but only addresses really two aspects of the global warming, addresses conservation and recycling. And there was some discussion earlier in the hearing that maybe this is a broader concern. I would suggest that the bill not only include conservation recycling, but also alternative methods. Sometimes by changing the way we do things, we can benefit the environment. Rather than using polluting traditional methods, there may be alternative methods that would be less harmful to the environment.
Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Representative Weehead.
Just a point of clarification. Recycling, it says renewable resources. That's not necessarily recycling.
Yes, sir, you're right. I misread that. I would suggest that as an amendment on page 2, line 6, after the word conservation, to insert use of alternative fuels.
Give us that again, Dale.
Use of alternative fuels.
After conservation?
After the word conservation, And I, for the record, I'll read a short definition of what I mean by alternative fuel. As used in this section, alternative fuel means a fuel usable for the operation of motor vehicles that when burned produces emissions of particulates, oxides of nitrogen, volatile organic compounds, and carbon monoxide at lower levels than are produced when gasoline is burned. In other words, fuels that pollute less than gasoline. Propane as a motor fuel is certainly not experimental. There are over 4 million automobiles in the world operated by propane. The Portland School District buys 1 million gallons of propane per year. And I would suggest that if we began to convert vehicles from gasoline and diesel to alternative fuels, including propane, that we could continue to operate motor vehicles, but do so with less pollution, less harm to the atmosphere, and less global warming. So that is a suggestion for your consideration to recognize that there may be some alternative methods in addition to conservation and the use of renewable resources. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Redmond?
What I passed out looks pretty thick, but most of it is just graphs and tables, if you noticed.
Mr. Chairman, may I be excused so I can go to another committee?
Yes. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kelly Redmond. I'm the state climatologist for Oregon, and I'm also the president-elect of the American Association of State Climatologists.
Welcome.
And I'm over at OSU. And I'm interested in this, as I am in many other kinds of climate issues. And I'll just read through what I wrote down here. We've all heard that the expectation of an increase in the so-called greenhouse gases will lead to changes in global climate. This bill deals in an initial way with the type of response that Oregon should be taking in the face of this prospect. Although I'm interested in the policy aspects of this issue, my main concern is with the climatic facets of the problem. Because of the relative lack of violent or spectacular weather phenomena, I think there's a common perception among the residents of the Pacific Northwest that weather and climate are not of much importance. I feel, however, that the Pacific Northwest may be more sensitive to changes in climate than any other region of the country. Climate affects heavily both the supply and the demand for energy in the Pacific Northwest. About 3/4 of the power generated in this region is hydroelectric. All of that energy came out of the sky. The supply of energy is very dependent on precipitation and on temperature. Temperature affects the level of the rain snow line, and it also affects the rate and the timing of the snowmelt season and the peak flows in streams. Temperature also affects the demand for energy by influencing the need for winter heating and for summer cooling. Temperature can further have indirects on the supply of energy by increasing, for example, the need during summer heat waves for water for irrigation and municipal use, which might otherwise be used for power generation. For these reasons, much of the economy of the Pacific Northwest is dependent on climatic factors. Even if the Pacific Northwest climate does not, for some reason, change greatly due to changes in the composition of the atmosphere, Oregon may also be affected indirectly by regional changes which take place in other places in the United States or perhaps in Canada. For example, if the flow in the Colorado River were to be affected by a change in climate, the Columbia Basin may loom more attractively to interest in other states, such as California or elsewhere, as a source of water or as a source of either water or power. This bill calls for the identification of trends in energy needs, supply, and conservation. This will, of necessity, require better monitoring of climate and climate trends. As stated above, climate is heavily involved with the supply and the demand for energy in this region. In addition, to determine the effectiveness of conservation practices, adjustments and allowances need to be made for the effects of weather. Climate is also an important ingredient in the determination of utility rate structures. The use of and need for alternative energy sources, which contribute little or nothing to the greenhouse warming, is certain to increase. Almost all of these alternative energy sources are related to climate. Wind power, for example, is purely a climatic element. Solar power is affected by cloudiness and to a lesser extent by atmospheric turbidity.
Small head hydro, another source, is affected by precipitation variations. Biomass, another one, is subject to the same environmental circumstances that any agricultural product experiences. The climate changes that focus attention on these other sources of energy may change the availability of these sources as well. In addition, these other sources are subject to the usual variations in climate. For example, in studies that we've done over at OSU, we've noted a number of interesting changes in the availability of wind power over the past 10 or 20 years. Basically, they've shown a decrease for about the last dozen years or so in much of the Pacific Northwest. There is a real need for knowing what is actually occurring, independently of what is anticipated or expected. I've seen a number of statements in the popular press where it appears to be an accepted fact that climate in the Pacific Northwest has already started to change. And yet, I see little evidence that people are asking the questions of whether we are indeed seeing these changes so far. And in such a spirit, I have appended to this testimony a number of pages, which you can look through at your leisure later on, of time series of annual plots of temperature for a number of places in Oregon. I picked out mostly about half a dozen or a dozen of them, and also some more detailed ones on Salem and Pendleton to represent a spot in the eastern and western sides of the state. I haven't corrected these for something which is referred to as time of observation bias, but most of these are from airport locations and should be reasonable for the last 20 to 40 years or so, where their observing conditions are constant. And as you look through them, I can go through them real quickly with you if you're interested. The evidence for climatic warming in Oregon is quite ambiguous. There's some subtleties in the interpretation of these that I think are really beyond my present comments here. And maybe I could just quickly go through them with you. I've plotted on the same scale, going from 1890 to 1990 in all these charts, annual mean temperatures at the Astoria Airport. That's the first one there. And that's a place that shows some evidence of warming. Then there's from the Portland Airport, a fairly pronounced rise through time, the second one. Salem shows a little bit of an increase in the last few years, but no pronounced trend. Eugene actually shows a kind of a cooling taking place. This is at the Eugene Airport since about 1940 or so. That's, the earlier record is from other places around these cities. Medford shows three very warm years in the past 3 years, but it doesn't show much of a trend before that time. Bend shows a trend through time. Nearby Redmond does not. And I use that as an example of illustrating some of the problems of the interpretation of these records. I've also got time series for Hermiston, Pendleton, and over near Ontario, and all of those show a considerable cooling in the last decade or so. And then I've put on some charts for Salem for seasonal temperatures for spring, summer, autumn, and winter. And there's an additional one for the month of April and for the month of May. And you can thumb through those at your leisure. The point of these being that the climate changes which may take place don't necessarily have to occur uniformly in every season in the same way. Some seasons may not be affected, others may be affected more, or affected at different time lags as well. And finally, toward the end, just if you've never seen one of these before, I showed the second from the last one is a graph of the daily temperatures at Salem over the last year. And this shows what a real year is like. And you can see there's lots of variation within the year. And on the last page, I plotted the annual temperature at Salem to the very same scale to indicate what the sizes of the changes are we're talking about in relationship to the daily variations that we typically see. So you can look at those later on, but and I have lots of other, I've got hundreds of these graphs really I've generated for different parts of Oregon. Let me just go on here. It should be emphasized that the needed data cannot be assembled overnight. The requisite databases must be developed carefully so that the eventual demand can be adequately met. And I think the state of Oregon is quite fortunate that the excellent facilities for providing this information are available within the state. I think it would be greatly beneficial to a widely diverse set of interests if the state supported efforts to monitor the climatic conditions in Oregon and provide periodic updates on them, for example, with something like monthly summaries. Another point that I'd like to make is that the climatic regime experienced by Oregon does not exist in a vacuum, independent of the rest of the world. What happens in Oregon is linked to processes occurring over the entire globe. For the next decade, there will be a concerted effort by the scientific community to illuminate and understand the complex assemblages of linkages that exist between climate, the biosphere, and the geosphere. This is often referred to as the mission to planet Earth. Oregon has an opportunity to both gain from and contribute to this initiative.
Mr. Redman, let me ask you, I find your testimony quite interesting and helpful, but specifically, what are you proposing in reference to this bill?
I would like to since the bill deals with global warming and its effects on Oregon, there isn't much mention of climate, per se, in the bill. And I would like to see some emphasis on, I'm for this bill, and I'd like to see some emphasis on the monitoring of what is actually happening in the state, rather than simply just the projected changes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Agnew.
The bill assumes that there is a phenomenon of global warming. Your data that you've shown here for Oregon, if it is typical of data elsewhere, would indicate that there is no global warming. At the very least, that you can't conclude it from,
right.
from the kind of data.
I would say that, yeah.
So, how does your data? Are we an anomaly in the rest of the world? Is warming?